Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 11 of Robot Radio. This is Greg Stanwood along with Andrew Martin. And today we're trying something new. Because there's a doubleheader today, we're actually recording in the middle of a game. A game that's not televised, however, so we're watching on game day. Seth Smith just singled, it seems.
Yep, Seth Smingle singed, and good work, everyone.
So we acted, but we'll try not to make it sound too terribly, incoherent or any such thing. I've turned off the radio so I can hear okay and that sort of thing. Well, it's been a week of some crazy ups and downs for the team. On last weekend, we had the Ubaldo Jimenez no-hitter. And then, I guess, was it Tuesday or Wednesday that we got the news that the team president, Kelly McGregor, was found dead in Salt Lake City. A very sudden event that obviously caused a lot of turmoil within the clubhouse, and, you know, it just came out of nowhere. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
It was kind of one of those things that just kind of hits you by surprise. I didn't know much about Kelly McGregor. I knew that the team, you know, loved him a lot. He's been there since the beginning. I know that he's a Colorado sports star, but past that, I mean, I didn't, you know. It was just sad to hear that a guy that the team loves so much, that has meant such a big amount in Rocky's history, just suddenly passed on like that. Very, very sad, very sudden, very tragic.
Yeah, I mean, he was not really a public figure in the same sense that, say, a GM or an owner would be kind of to the fan base, and I'm sure a lot of people, you know, really didn't know that much about him other than maybe his sports career, but it's very clear that his role in terms of the pathway that the organization was taking since its beginning was very much part of his plan, and, you know, his identity is very much something that it seems will be missed by the organization. And he was clearly very close not only with the players in the front office, but the beat writers and the media have had nothing but positive things to say about him as well. And even the new players to the organization were very devastated by it. So there was a memorial video or tribute or something before the game today. We didn't get to see it because there's no television coverage of this first game. But I wonder if they'll show it before the second one. Are you going to watch the second game?
Oh yeah, probably. The word that I've heard about the memorial video is that they're going to delay the typical 1 o'clock start for Sunday's game
till
about 3 o'clock for the sake of memorial stuff. So
yeah, they did delay that game tomorrow, and I'm not sure exactly what ceremonies they're going to be doing, but it's clearly going to be a big deal. Do you know if if it's like a public thing and the people who had tickets to the game can go attend or what?
I don't know off the top of my head. When I heard that it was a 3 o'clock start, I anticipated it would be kind of an on-field memorial. But, well, I guess we'll just kind of have to see what happens there.
Yeah. I heard something on the radio broadcast. This is the second year in a row that we've had a doubleheader against the Marlins, both in Denver. So we need to keep our eyes open whenever Florida, for the bad weather they bring with them, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. From Florida, too, of all things. It just doesn't make much sense.
The inning ended. What happened?
Todd Helton flew out to left field. And to start off the next inning, Ronnie Paulino popped out to Todd Helton.
Yeah, I can see that part.
So
all right.
You ask me what happened then.
No, I couldn't see the end of the third inning. Game day moves from one inning to the other. So what else has been going on? Again, we've had some ups and downs. What wasn't really up and down was the series against, well, I guess you could say it was up and down as well, was the series against the Nationals. We split the series 2-2. The Nationals have probably in their limited history of 4 years since they left for Montreal, they've probably got one of the best offenses they've ever fielded.
Well, it's not bad with a guy like Adam Dunn heading things up. When I say heading things, well, I guess Ryan Zimmerman's really the one heading things up, but when you got a big bat in the middle of things like Dunn, it's, it's a good thing. Now, he's starting the season, absolutely terribly, so I benched him, so maybe he'll bat better now. But, really, I mean, they got a lot of, a lot of interesting guys. So you got Dunn, you got Zimmerman, who I mentioned. You got Christian Guzman, who's kind of rotating between several spots. Josh Willingham's another one there. You got a Knight Morgan, a real fire starter for that team.
Ivan Rodriguez has been off to a fantastic start.
Yeah, I wouldn't put much money on that lasting.
I wouldn't either, but, I mean, at this point, he's contributed so much that even in just 1 month of incredibly hot baseball, they probably got more than anybody expected from him.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I mean, they're expecting him to be kind of, you know, defensive catcher and team leader, and that's about it.
Well, he's leading the league right now, which is, you know, I mean, good for him.
A bit inexplicable, but hey, you know, good for him, like you just said.
Well, yeah, we had, beginning of the season, we had Edgar Renteria and a couple other people who were near the bottom of the totem pole in terms of offensive production last year, really kind of leading the movement at the beginning of 2010.
Well, take a look at who's leading the league in batting average right now. You got Ivan Rodriguez, then Scott Podsednik, and then Manny Ramirez, Martin Prado, Ryan Braun, Franklin Gutierrez, Andre Ethier, Placido Polanco, and then Justin Morneau and Chase Headley, and Jose Guillen. Like, all these people you would not expect to be leading the anything. Not everyone in there, but Podsednik's supposed to be done. Pudge is supposed to be done. Gutierrez is, well, he's kind of a question mark still as for how far his bat is. Polanco is supposed to be kind of, you know, an bat. Headley was, well, a division rival you got to watch out for there. Jose Guillen's supposed to suck now. It's supposed to be, you know, the big laughingstock contract, and look at him now. Hey, Carlson Zales is right down there, though, at 353 before the game started today.
Three up, three down, Greg Smith. That's nice.
Yep.
I'm sure everyone will be thrilled we're narrating a game that happened a few days ago.
Yeah, exactly. So we should probably not narrate the game, but speaking of the night and day game, you mentioned before we actually got on started recording here about how Tracy's starting his defensive team behind Greg Smith rather than starting them behind Aaron Cook. It seems a bit backwards. Why would you start Hop with a flyball pitcher on the mound and then bench Hop? I mean, I know that he's kind of sore still, so he's only going to play one of the games, but why would you bench him then when the sinker baller's on the mound?
I think the idea there, I mean, we already know Tracy loves his matchups, and with Nate Robertson being a lefty, he probably jumped to the conclusion that having Hop in the lineup against Nolasco would be superior without really taking the defense into account. Of course, I had brought up that the real concern for me is that when we see the lineup for the second game, we're going to be seeing our entire bench in the game, including Mora and Giambi. And really, you brought up that obviously Giambi makes sense because you don't want Helton to play night today. But at the same time, having Giambi on the mound when Aaron Cook is going to be there is kind of silly. So you brought up the idea that maybe they should have switched Cook and Smith in the order, and that they should have put Cook pitching this first game and then slid Smith to the next game.
And I wish that they'd thought of that beforehand, because there's a handful of reasons why it makes sense. First of all, your defensive optimality. If we're going to play, I mean, you're going to play Helton during the day game. That's just kind of the fact of it, because he's not going to go night then day. And he's going to be playing tomorrow, given that it's a doubleheader today. But if they decide to start Giambi tomorrow, too, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I will throw a fit. But
that no, truly wouldn't make sense. I mean, we know that having Helton play two baseball games in 24 hours is tough regardless. But you know, playing him, playing him two day games back to back is really not all that different than playing him two night games back to back, which they do at the beginning of every season. So put Giambi in there in the second game, and then.
But so the reason that I would have Cook pitch the day game is that, like I said, for a handful of reasons. First, you want to be able to get your defensively solid team out there. You want to get, I mean, if you're going to have Nolasco pitching during the day game one way or another, why not start Cook against him so that way you can put Hop in right field without having to worry. And it doesn't sound like Hop's had any troubles in right field or anything today, or there's been any bizarre plays that, you know, a better fielder would have butchered, you know, or would have gotten to that he might have butchered or something like that. So it's not, I mean, so far it hasn't, you know, turned around to bite us, but start Cook during the day game then, so that way you can have Helton out there. You can put Hop out there without any concerns, and whatever. And then put Smith in the night game, play your younger, better defensive outfielders, and that way also, with the really humid weather we're having recently, we've had a lot of rain and even some snow yesterday. It's pretty much all gone again now, but it's very wet right now. Then add the whole concept of it's night, so it gets cooler, and all of a sudden those fly balls might get knocked down a little bit more, so you're going to kind of play the weather to your advantage with Greg Smith as well.
Yeah, that's a lot of interesting thing there. I'm inclined to agree in pretty much every respect. I'm thinking if maybe – I don't really see Jim Tracy as the type to do this, but I'm wondering if they're going to reorder the rotation now that Smith and Cook have kind of been caught on the same day. Like, does this mean somebody's going to have to – well, no, I guess it doesn't. I'm just wondering if – I mean, we've had Greg Smith in the second spot the entire time. Now we're going to have Cook and Smith both able to go in 5 days. I wonder what happens. I need to take a look at the schedule and see how this shakes up.
Well, the issue is that Greg Smith's next start would come in 4 days, though.
Right, exactly. Which is
so do you pitch Smith on short rest, or do you juggle?
Or do you pitch Cook on short rest?
Well, I don't think either is necessarily the best option. It's pretty early in the season. So if you're going to pitch him on short rest, I would definitely make sure you have your bullpen ready to roll, or if you have a rough game the night before Smith's next start with Ubaldo or something, and well, that doesn't seem with Ubaldo pitching, I wouldn't worry too much about having your bullpen taxed just because he's very, very good at that pitching thing.
Right. So as it stands right now, we'll have De La Rosa tomorrow, Hamill against Arizona on the 26th. We'll have Jimenez on the 27th against Arizona, and we have that game on the 28th, that day game that I guess is kind of up in the air right now. We have a day off on the 29th, so basically we're going to have one pitcher getting short rest and one getting long rest or something like that. I don't really know. You know, I really don't – this doesn't strike me as the kind of thing that's really worth getting like a long reliever to start the game or anything like that. But at the same time, you don't want to, you know, risk injury to a player this early in the season with in a game that's really not like – there's nothing really in particularly special on the line.
If we assume that Ubaldo has another stellar outing, the bullpen's not very taxed, the next day when Smith is up, if he has to pitch short rest, maybe just have him go 80 innings, 80 pitches,
right,
something like that. Just a short outing and then let the bullpen eat a couple extra innings if they're and then you got the off day.
Exactly. That actually does line up perfectly. You can have a start on short rest, but it also be a shortened start. And, you know, just have him go 4 or 5 innings and let the pen eat up the rest. And then everybody can get rested on Thursday. So we should be managing the team.
You think, well, what kind of surprised me is for the chess master that Jim Tracy is, why he isn't just, you know, thinking of these things on his own, you know?
Of course, we'd probably criticize him for it because it's just easy.
If he really actually did something like this, like what I suggested, and granted, I'm just kind of saying this because I suggested it, but, you know, I would actually, I don't know, I mean, you raise a point there that I'd probably be just prone to criticize whatever and say, it's early in the season, blah, 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 blah. But, I don't know, I think that would not be a terrible option, and it's not as if Cook couldn't pitch the day game or Smith couldn't pitch the night game.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it would honestly be the best thing, but I guess the point I was just raising was, I mean, it's real easy for a fan base to criticize the manager, and you know, even regularly without any real reason to. I can't recall the last time that I saw a greatly favored manager consistently only lauded by their fan base. I mean, even Mike Socha, who has like a fantastic standing in the Anaheim system, still you see random fans just go off on him over the tiniest little thing. And I guess that could be chalked up to anything. It could be, you know, lack of knowledge by the fans or anything, but it just seems like, you know, the first spot where fan criticism is going to go is to the manager, and if they can't blame the manager anymore, it'll go up to the GM, owner, whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because if you look at the Angels last season, they had you've got to be kidding me, a strikeout on that? That's right down the middle, Chris. umpire's giving Nolasco a bit of a wide strike zone there. After missing 3-0, then he suddenly gives him the corners. That and okay,
wait,
whatever.
Can you see the game? Or are you looking at game day?
I'm looking at game day.
Okay, that looks right down the middle on my game day.
No, you're right. The strikeout pitch was right down the middle, and it was a swinging strikes. No, I'm saying that the fourth and fifth pitches of the at bat were definitely not in the strike zone.
What was that?
My cell phone.
Okay.
Thought I had it on silent. Apparently, I didn't.
That was a very mysterious sound. I thought like aliens were landing in your backyard or something.
No, just Iron Man.
Ah, okay. Well, speaking of that, I think Jeff Aberle posted on the comments section during the game that Miguel Olivo is the Rockies' nomination for the All-Star team voting. Any thoughts on that?
He's played better than I had so far.
Yeah, that's kind of where I came down on it as well.
He's gunning people down on the base path, and he's obviously not walking because Miguel Olivo does not walk. However, let's see, I had the numbers up here. He is third on the team in weighted on base average with a .413. He's batting .303/.343/.606 slugging. Excuse me, that's a .300 isolated slugging. That's massive.
Yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise, I think, for a lot of us, and he's kind of covering for a slow start to Iannetta's season. Of course, it's really more of a platoon relationship right now, but it's favoring Olivo a little bit.
It is. And as much as I hate it because I'm an Iannetta fanboy and stuff, Iannetta's doing the same things he did wrong last season, too. And, I mean, he said he had that toe tap in the late season. He figured things out. And apparently he didn't remember how to do it because right now we're seeing a really high fly ball rate from Iannetta, a really low line drive rate, and a really low batting average on balls in play. He's walking roughly the same amount, and he's hitting for roughly the same amount of power, but he's not he is not just getting the ball in play.
The other player, though, who is getting balls in play is Ian Stewart, who just singled after Iannetta. So, again, we've always been citing Iannetta and Stewart as the two who needed to have breakout years. Stewart's doing it so far. I've been impressed with everything I've seen from him, pretty much. He's still got those random fits of defensive of oddity, but he always makes up for them with those amazing, like, throw-off-the-leg plays or whatever.
Well, the thing with Stewart and his fielding, it's never going to be... He does not have... He makes errors. He makes too many errors, which is going to be a problem for him, but he has very good range at third base. Basically, if you balance everything out, he's a slightly above average third baseman. And UCR has been updated for him, at least, and that is basically agreeing with me that he is a slightly above average third baseman.
Right. And, you know, I've never been too much of a complainer about his defense. Of course, I think he kind of overperformed a little bit last year, especially since he has had so much trouble throughout his professional career in that. But, you know, he's certainly an upgrade over Atkins.
Oh, yeah. Well, Atkins actually had a decent season last year, but I think he kind of saw the tide turning or something and figured he might as well do something right and didn't even do that well, and nah.
Yeah, it was not a good season for Atkins, really, in general. He didn't really play enough to have his defense matter, except in the beginning of the year, of course. So, let's see. We're already running short on topics here.
I could think of things to talk about. I mean, we've had some slow starts from guys we were expecting to be amazing. I mean, looking at the team weighted on average list right now, Todd Helton is batting barely above average as far as weighted on base average goes. He's batting, before today's game, a line of .300, .375, .360. Right there, that singles hitter territory right there. So he's got to start finding the gaps, or we're going to strongly start criticizing Todd Helton's play.
That's interesting. There hasn't been a lot of criticism on Helton lately so far this year. I think his... he's in general been seemingly productive because he's been getting hits and he's doing his traditional amazing work the count magic. But that's an interesting point that I never would have really discovered otherwise, because, you know, let me pull up some stats real quick if my browser will cooperate. Yeah,
I just
okay.
got a text message from user J-Rock. He's asking why they pulled Hop for the game. Probably his tight quad.
Yeah, say so. He it was having issues before. They didn't say that they were going to pull him mid-game, though. I wonder if... I mean, the obvious fear is that he aggravated it again, but I don't... Since I don't have radio coverage right now, we're doing the podcast recording, I don't know if something happened. But if I were to guess, you know, play him for, you know, the first five innings of the game, first four innings, I guess. And, you know, it's not like our bench is you know, having Fowler and now Spielberg's in the game. Spielberg's is taking over right field. It's not that big of a downgrade. We have an amazing set of five outfielders on the team.
Yeah, I agree completely there. Well, I mean, that we're also... It's early still, so it's kind of tough to really put a lot of, you know, stock into this, but out of our players, Brad Hopp is just absolutely devastating. We don't think about it that much, but he is crushing the baseball right now. 5.16 weighted on base average. Before the game started, he's batting 375, 479, 750. Good for a 1229 OPS. I mean, granted, he has a batting average on balls and play of 400, which is going to come down somewhat, but Hop's having a very strong offensive first half, but or, you know, season so far, but we'll kind of see how much that tapers off when second half Brad Hopp shows up.
Wait, we scored?
Yeah, Tulowitzki was on first base, and then we got a single poked through.
Gosh, I am not paying attention.
No, that's okay.
That's okay. The podcast is more important. We must go on.
We had Stewart next with a 436, then Olivo, 413, Spilly, 384, Gonzalez. This is funny because everyone's thinking about how Gonzalez is just like, you know, the monster fireball, destroyer, dragon, monster, whatever of the team. But he's batting 353. Problem is he hasn't walked yet. And which is okay. If he's getting the hits, he's getting the hits. But he's also slugging 471, which is a pretty low ISO compared to where his career lines of about, he's in the upper 100s to, you know, young smaller 200s. 346 weighted on base average, and it's almost exclusively driven by on base percentage. So, I mean, it's good to see him getting the hits. It's good to see, and I'm glad to have a guy. If he's going to be hitting for no power right now, fine, keep him at leadoff. I have no problem there. Helton, like I said, is just slightly above average. But then Smith is decidedly below average. Tulo is decidedly below average. Barmas is decidedly below average. Iannetta is way below. And Fowler is the worst regular player on the team with a 238 weighted on-base average. On-base percentage of 234, so it's not like we can even make a, you know, some sort of excuse about how he's just hitting singles or whatever, or walking
right.
A hole. No, he would have a better weighted on-base average if he's doing anything right. And right now, I mean, those bottom four, the good thing about Tulo, at least, he's up to 277 batting average, but he's not slugging yet, and he's not really walking much as well either.
He's 2-for-2 today, which is going to help that out a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the point is, it doesn't look pretty so far, but that's okay, because it's going to come around.
Yeah,
I mean, Tulo's a slow starter.
Exactly, I was just about to say that. And this is actually he's coming around a little bit faster than he usually has.
Mm-hmm.
It's oftentimes been until early May that's really started to really show itself. And, of course, in 2008, he got hurt. So.
Well, let's not start counting chickens quite yet, because we still got May to go through. The one I'm really concerned about is Seth Smith, because he's getting pop-out crazy, too. He's batting 188 with a 257 on-base percentage of 438 slugging. So he's getting on-base, and he's slugging well. But he's got a 174 batting average on balls in play, and a lot of that can be attributed to a low line drive rate and a much higher fly ball rate. In fact, those numbers are up to, 16% line drive rate as compared to a 20% career. Ground balls aren't really an issue, but 56% fly ball as compared to 40% career. And then he's also got a 7.1 infield fly ball. But the point is pop-ups. He's popping up way too much. And Iannetta's doing the same thing. They're just getting under it too much. And
so as a consensus right now, I take it you're saying that there's still a lot of room to go for improvement in terms of the offense.
Oh, my, yes. I mean, it's good to see Hop, Stewart, Olivo, Spielberg's, and Gonzalez all hitting the ball. It's concerning to see Todd Helton kind of poking singles everywhere, and it's disturbing to see Smith and Iannetta and Fowler all doing as poorly as they are.
Now, a lot of people have been saying Fowler has been a little overlooked simply due to BABIP. Is there any...
Yes, there is. He only has a BABIP of 213, which is obviously very low, especially when you consider his career line, which comes out to 326. So he's definitely got some rebounding to do there. But really, the fact that he's batting the 169, 234, 288 line shows no power whatsoever. Well, I mean, it's 119 ISO, which, I mean, yeah, he's hitting a couple doubles. He's got, you know, three of them on the season and two triples, which is all good and fine, but he seems to be walking a bit less, and he just can't seem to get the bat on the ball well. And as far as fly balls and line drives go for him, he's a little bit below. He's 17.4 line drives compared to 21 last season, and he's not really hitting any more fly balls than normal. I think he's just getting unlucky. I think with Fowler, it is legitimately a batting average on balls in play thing, because he's got... The line drive percentage will poke up as he gets a little bit more adjusted, but it's not like it's catastrophically like 10% lower than normal there. And I know you're all getting the number vomit here, but this is one of those cases where you got to kind of look at his career numbers as compared to his current season numbers. And honestly, Fowler is just getting unlucky. He doesn't seem to be doing anything that far out of normal to account for his very low batting line. Problem is, it's just showing up very, very badly. And he's not walking much either, not nearly as much as we're accustomed to. And
there hasn't been a lot of walking going on with the team in general.
I believe not. No, let me duplicate. New tab. Fangraphs is our friend.
I heard somewhere that like Fangraphs was going to close or something. I don't think that's true. But somebody was throwing something about that around. I don't know if it was a joke or what, but I never really caught on to what was going on.
Well, considering that SB Nation just partnered with them, I can't imagine they're closing.
Maybe that's what I read. I mean, it was one of those things where, like, on some blog somewhere, I saw a comment about it, but I didn't look into it any further.
Okay, getting on base as far as walks go, the Twins and the Yankees are up top, and Braves all above 12%, Twins almost at 13, and the Rockies are 7th from the bottom at 8.7. Which is pretty awful.
Let's talk about San Diego for a little bit. Last season, they had a couple of really interesting winning streaks. Going into last season, everybody had already counted them out. Sounds kind of like this season. And early in the season, they led the division for a decent amount of time, and I also believe they had a couple really long win streaks. And then they came out at the end with like a 10-game win streak or something such similar to that.
Well, they're a young, fiery team, and you can, you know, we can throw all sorts of other anecdotal kind of things in there. They're going to, I mean, the problem with San Diego is that because they're made almost entirely of rookies slash young players slash, you know, they're kind of look like the 2006 Rockies right about now. You know, a lot of their young farmhands are finally coming up and stuff like that, so we don't really anticipate them to do anything, but who knows, it could be like the 2007 Rockies who suddenly... just, you know, play way above their heads and, you know, kick some butt or whatever. I mean, we didn't play that far above our heads. I shouldn't say that about the Rockies in 2007, but you see the point. Basically, they're bucking the developmental trend. Like, we all thought that, well, not we all, but on my end of things, we thought that 2008 was going to be their breakout year, and it turns out it was 2007, which was kind of fluky in nature, but whatever. We made the World Series and stuff. The Padres, they're batting well above average right now. Right now, Gonzalez has a .444 weighted on base average, so it's nothing compared to Brad Hobbs, so, you know, wouldn't even worry about it that much. But then Chase Headley batting in a .415 clip, Will Venable .366, Nick Hundley .361, Kyle Blanks .348, Scott Harrison .343, and then your below average players are Eckstein, Gwynn, Cabrera, and Hairston.
Hairston, the other Hairston, Jerry.
Jerry Hairston, yeah. Jerry Hairston is not. He's batting .227. .244, .250 for a .494 ops and a .234 weighted on base average.
It is funny. I was thinking about this before, and I'm sure it's been brought up. I'm sure you noticed this as well. Just a funny thing about the Padres. As far as I can remember, there hasn't been a year that I've watched the team that they haven't had a pair of brothers on their team.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny too when you look at Jerry and Scott, how much alike they look. Like, once in a while, I will honestly make the mistake and be like, hey, wow, look at Scott there. He looks just like Jerry.
Oh, wait, that is Jerry.
No, wait, yeah, exactly.
Now,
their pitching isn't looking bad either. We go by the ex-FIP stat, which is your FIP but adjusted. Let's see, Gallagher is... Well, this is actually funny because Joe Thatcher actually has a negative 2.98 ex-FIP, but he also has probably pitched like two innings or something. Let me pull that up right quick here. Yeah, 2010, he has pitched one, he's faced one batter and struck that batter out, and therefore has a negative 2.98 xFIP.
Okay.
But as far as like their rotation goes, yeah, Wade LeBlanc with a 2.24 xFIP, Clayton Richard with a 3.84, then Chris Young 4.67, Kevin Correa 3.35, Matt Latos 3.98, and John Garland with a 5.11, which is funny because Garland is their veteran pitcher who he's actually walked more guys than he struck out this season, John Garland. I heard rumors that he's not that great, but hey, you know what do I know? I think their hope is that he'll turn himself around a bit come the trade deadline and then just boost him anywhere for anything, you know? They're just trying... It's one of those things that somebody always does in sim baseball, is they pay a bunch of money and pick up a whole bunch of useful free agents, not necessarily the best, but a bunch of useful guys, then the deadline is trade them off for prospects.
Well, that's kind of what happened to John Garland last season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was signed by Arizona and then went off to the Dodgers, and now he's with San Diego. Watch, we're the ones who trade for him.
I can't imagine us trading anything of value to San Diego for him. But
I can't either. I was just, you know, he's making his way around the NL West these past couple
yeah. Difference being with Arizona, though, is that he... Arizona thought they saw a shot at it, I'm guessing. I cannot imagine that they thought that they were going to fall out as much as they did, but they obviously did, and they lost Brandon Webb first game of the season. I don't think they anticipated that either. So they picked up John Garland in the attempt to, you know, do well, but it ended up they just had to trade him. I can't imagine San Diego did anything but, hey, let's pick up John Garland so we can ride the crap out of him and not have to waste a bunch of our young arms.
Yeah, exactly.
So as far as their bullpen goes, and let's see, let's give a minimum innings pitch of 10. Oh, yeah, two pitchers have pitched over 10 under their bullpen. That's Tim Stouffer and Edward Mujica. Let's see, xFIP of 3.06 for Mujica and 2.33 for Stouffer. And, yeah, that's about where they're sitting right there. Stouffer hasn't yet to allow a run. And he's left everybody who's let on base, somewhat low batting average on balls in play, but he's only allowing a 194 average. He has walked like one guy, it looks like, and he has a 10 strikeout to walks ratio. That's pretty sick right there. Now, San Diego is definitely turning some heads. I am not going to pretend that I don't think they're going to do this well all season. I really strongly don't. I think that they're going to tail off, and they're just going to feel the effects of the long season and how they're, you know, they're not that great, is about the size of it, but we'll have to, I don't mean to just completely discount them, because I still think they're going to be a tough team to beat. I just don't think they're going to be so tough to beat that they win the division.
Well, like I had brought up before, they kind of started off last season like this as well. They surged ahead all of a sudden and caught everyone off guard, and there was kind of a brief miniature hype followed by a brief miniature backlash, and then they kind of fell back into where people expected them to go. Of course, they still ended up finishing above Arizona. I wouldn't expect them to go far either, but I just thought I'd bring it up because, you know, it's relevant to the division. And as it stands right now, almost towards the end of April, the Rockies are responsible for 33% of their team losses with that one series, which is kind of amusing. Anyway, is there anything else that you want to discuss?
No, we got a pretty dull show today, so, you know, sorry about that, everyone.
Yeah, lots of numbers going on. I mean, I guess with so much, I don't know if it's just that we got all the Nationals talk out of the way last week or whatever, but it also didn't help that we were watching the game in the middle of the show.
No, I've been back and forth. I've been kind of swinging around Fangraphs. Hey, it's still 3-1. The Padres are just a relatively interesting team to watch, so I don't think it's bad for us to be focusing on our rivals during the shows here, and I hope that no one else minds that either, because we're going to keep doing it unless there's very vocal and strong opposition to it.
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, a big part of the stuff we're going to have to talk about in the middle of the season is our opponents.
Yeah.
And so talking about, you know, the Nationals or the Marlins or whatever are going to be kind of regular features. And, I mean, this definitely isn't going to be the kind of place where we just go off on things about our own team all the time, especially now that, you know, the way the team is right now, we basically have everybody with the exception of Francis Street and Buchholz in the places that we want them to be. So there aren't any more, oh, we should, you know, dump so-and-so and move on with person A. And I'm sure the real exciting stuff for me, being the transactions guy, is going to be once Street and Francis and Buchholz are starting to, you know, get on rehab assignments and we're going to start having to figure out, you know, who's going to get cut. That's going to be interesting to me. We're going to have...
Well, a lot of it, I think everyone's a little bullish on Buchholz considering his 2008 season. But, you know, he is going to be coming off a whole season without throwing a baseball, so...
That's correct, but at the same time, we don't have anywhere to put him other than the major league team. So I guess regardless, he's going to be rusty. Nobody should be expecting him to go, like, straight into the seventh inning or something like that. He's going to have to take over a middle relief role until he proves that he's in A-grade shape.
And I'm hoping the organization isn't afraid to stretch out that 60-day disabled list / rehab assignment time frame as long as they need to.
Oh, I don't think that'll be a problem. I mean, the Buchholz have been gone so long that there's not really any pressure to get him back, especially now that we have a bullpen that's kind of, you know, functioning well enough. Looking at Project Libra, Taylor Buchholz is going to be eligible to return on May 25th, which obviously isn't going to happen. He's still on track for mid-June, or at least that's the way that they think it is. But, you know, if something goes wrong, I don't think they're going to have a problem holding him back until the second half of the season if they have to.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they said during the offseason, getting Buchholz back will be our version of... we're not going to have a big, you know, bullpen-centered trade deadline because we're going to be getting Buchholz back.
Right. Assuming, you know, that he shows some sort of response back to MLB level and fits in okay. I mean, look, I've been concerned about a sudden daily explosion for a while, but it hasn't happened yet. He still remains the easiest to get rid of, followed by Corpus.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that once Street comes back, it's going to be Flores in the hot seat. And once Francis comes back, it's going to be Smith, obviously.
Yeah. And which could be worse, because Smith will have a logical spot as a long man.
Well, I think Smith would probably be demoted, wouldn't he? I don't think they'd put him in the pen, because then we'd have to cut somebody else.
Oh, good point. But it'll also be kind of contingent on, like you mentioned, Flores, and then also Matt Belisle.
Right, that's true. And Flores will be on the hot seat specifically because, you know, Morales will be leaving the closer's role, assuming Street returns to the closer's role. You know, I wonder if they'll put him straight back into the closer's role. I would think they would, but...
I think they will, but I don't think it's necessarily the best idea. As long as they make it clear, we just want to get you readjusted to Major League hitters for a week or two here. You're going to have the 7th, and then Rafa, and then Morales, and it's not trying to be an insult. We just want to make sure that you are comfortable, ready to slide back into the closer's role, and once you're ready, we'll just flip-flop you and Morales.
Right. So there's going to be some musical chairs in the pitching department when that happens, but until then, you know, I think we have the 12 people who are best fit to be on the team right now.
Agreed.
Which is a good spot to be in. And again, you know, I voiced my concerns about the bullpen for a while, and they didn't start off particularly well, in my opinion, but yet... there were a lot of positive things about their performances, and now we've seen basically everybody go out and do their jobs, at least to some extent. Mm-hmm. So, I really can't complain about that.
it's true. Yeah, I mean, they haven't looked too glamorous, and everyone got a little bit freaked out at the beginning of the season when everyone looked really rough. But, you know, they're getting it done, and I think honestly the bullpen, despite any, brief microcosms of a specific batter or a specific inning or a specific situation. In general, I would make the case that the bullpen is one of the reasons why we are not three games below 500.
Well, you know, the positive contribution is there, and I hope that they can keep it up.
I agree, especially with Smith in the sixth here with a three-run game, and Danny Eagla doubled the lead off the inning. He only had 78 pitches, so we might see six or seven out of him. Anyhow.
Yep, I think that wraps it up. On behalf of myself and Andrew, we'll see you next week. Take care.